StashMyComics.com interview with Troy Hickman part 2. In this portion of the interview, we talk more about Twilight Guardian. We zoom in on some details about his story in Twilight Guardian, such as pharmaceutical drugs, the nature of mental illness, and Troy Hickman's views on real-life superheroes. Keep an eye on the StashMyComics.com homepage for a Troy Hickman giveaway. And also, if you haven't already, please register an account with us. Your stash will be created automatically, and you'll be able to begin cataloging your comics collection for free online at StashMyComics.com. Also, check out our forums, where you can connect with other comics collectors, and read our blog, where you'll see interesting reviews, columns, and interviews. Now to the interview. A couple other questions about Twilight Guardian. A few details. I noticed you tend to... It's a very rich comic book in the sense that if you pay attention to the details, it reveals a lot about the character and the world she lives in. For instance, she's doing a nightly patrol, and we read the entry to her journal, but it's juxtaposed to her walking around town, so it reads as her thoughts, which they are. And she says, it's so hard, my mind isn't as clear as I would like. And throughout the book, we get hints that she is possibly suffers from a mental illness of some kind. But she says, at least I stopped taking that clomipramine. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but I do know it as an SSRI, and without getting too technical, that's a Prozac-like drug. And I'm aware of what that is and the controversy that follows it. I was wondering if we can expect you to explore that theme at all, or how this character is dealing with that, and with the drug, the mental illness, and all those things. Can we expect you to delve into that?
See, one of the things, and this is why it's hard when people will ask me what Twilight Guardian, the series, is about. And as I said, I mean, yeah, I can tell them it's about this woman who thinks she's a superhero and she patrols her neighborhood. Okay, that's, you know, that's the 25 words or less kind of thing that, you know, you'd pitch, you know, as a TV show or something. But the miniseries is, the problem with that is it's about so many different things. It's really, I'm trying not to be a one-trick pony with it. And one of the many things that it's about is sort of the nature of whatever you want to call it, mental illness, insanity. And the question arises as far as how do you, you know, qualify when somebody is actually insane, and how do you quantify how insane they are? And, you know, in Twilight Guardian, yeah, there's indications that she's been on medicine for, you know, for some sort of a disorder. She obviously operates in a way that's, you know, most people probably would not. And, you know, as I said, she came out of my series, Tales of the Pathetic Club, which is about people with OCD. But, again, the question becomes, well, you know, is she really mentally ill, and how do we define that? I mean, she's a person who, she lives by herself. She's able to do that successfully, as far as we can see. She holds down a regular job. We know that she has had a boyfriend in the recent past. She has a regular relationship with her mother. So she would seem to be somebody that, by most litmus tests, is a functional human being. The question becomes, you know, is she maybe a little bit crazy. And this is kind of where it dovetails also with the whole notion of comic books. Comic books in and of themselves are a major theme of the series. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time over the years at comic conventions and at signings and things. And, you know, a lot of folks from the psychiatric community, if they were sitting at the table next to me, you know, when I'm at conventions, a lot of them could probably drum up a lot of business there. Simply because there are a lot of folks who come up and they really, they seem a little bit out there. You know, and in some cases, maybe it is. Maybe, you know, I know I've met a lot of folks in comics, you know, in comic fandom who, you know, have, you know, maybe Asperger's or some sort of other, you know, sort of social disorder where they can't necessarily make normal connections with people and things. Now, and that's probably, you know, in the vast minority, but you meet a lot of really strange people in sort of comicdom as a whole. And, you know, the question becomes, well, you know, are they a little off the beaten path? Are they maybe just a little bit crazy? Well, a lot of these people lead very successful lives, and by any other standard, you know, would probably be considered quite sane. So, you know, I don't know what to say about that. As far as, you know, I guess I bring a little bit of myself personally to this, because I've probably since at least my teenage years, I've kind of dealt with OCD. That's why I ended up doing the Pathetic Club series in the first place. In my case, it fluctuates. When I was in high school, every day was just an absolute horror for me, and so it was fairly considerable. I had all sorts of rituals that I had to do that, you know, that I thought would somehow protect me from what I was going through. These days, it's very minor. I do find myself occasionally coming back into the apartment after I've left to make sure that the stove is turned off and, you know, that kind of thing. And I still play those little mental games that pretty much everybody does, where you say to yourself, okay, if I do this thing, then therefore something good is going to happen or will protect me from this bad thing happening. You know, I think that's fairly common among everyone, but I've got experience with that. And I've also known people who in the comic business who have been on various, you know, medications and have said, you know, I'm not going to take these anymore because they're affecting what I do. They affect my ability to create. And, you know, they kind of dull my senses in one way or another. And so that's sort of what happens with Twilight Guardian in the series. You know, she says, well, you know, I don't feel like I'm on the top of my game when I'm taking this medicine. So she stops taking it. And as of now, the only person who probably knew she was taking it in the first place is her mother. And she hasn't confided in her that she stopped taking it yet, because we get the idea that there's no way her mother would accept that. So.
You mentioned her relationship with her mother, and so far all we know is that since that she broke up with her ex-boyfriend John, that's pretty much the only interaction she has with other people, which is also mirrored with her living mostly at night. And the artwork does a good job of expressing that loneliness and or that solitude. Now, I was wondering if are you going to? I suppose you. I don't want you to spoil it, but are you going to introduce Twilight Guardian to other characters or give her new friends, help her overcome this slump she's in? I guess. What I'm asking is, will Twilight Guardian overcome her loneliness?
Yeah, loneliness is another of the themes of the book, and it's another one of those things which has really come out of, again, so much of what I write, even though it's couched in superhero stuff, there's a lot of autobiography to it. And for me, I mean, ever since probably my late teens or so, you know, I have always loved walking around at night, and I still do to this day. And, you know, I'll take long walks, especially, you know, late into the night, like, you know, any time from, say, midnight to 4 or so before it gets light. And I've always done that. And I found at an early age, while it's a great thing to do and you can really kind of delve into your thoughts, at the same time, it's a tremendously sort of lonely and desolate thing to do. And when you're walking around at, 3 in the morning, on a Sunday or something, there's absolutely nothing out there, especially, in the kind of neighborhoods that I'm walking around in. There's not that much going on in the light of day. So you can imagine, how they are at that time of night. And there's a real sense of loneliness about it because most of the time, you're the only person out there, and other people, most of them have their lights off and everything, and there are people in those houses, but you're not interacting with them. I mean, you're in the midst of them, but you're totally unconnected. So there is a real sense of loneliness there, and so I think I bring that from, as I said, kind of walking around and the like. There's actually a lot of details in there. There are certainly things in Twilight Guardian that are fictionalized, but I do bring a lot of the stuff that that I see when I'm walking around at night into that. And there was just there's a panel in the first issue, for instance, where Twilight Guardian stops to pet this dog that's tied up to a tree, and she calls him Whitey. She's given him the name Whitey. I pass that dog almost every time that I'm walking around at night. They've got him tied to a tree outside. He looks kind of like a Dalmatian without any spots. He's just the nicest dog in the world. I always stop and pet him, and I don't give him beef jerky because I tend not to carry that with me, but he's just a very sweet dog, and so I stuck him in the comic. I don't know, he may never read it, so he might not appreciate the fact that he's in there. But and as far as your question as, will that kind of loneliness change? That's with the second issue, that's one of the most important things that I'm dealing with in the second issue, because I take her out of her comfort zone, right? If you remember the end of the first issue, she's invited to this meeting of real-life superheroes, and they're going to be meeting at a comic book convention. And so I'm suddenly taking her not just out of her neighborhood, which is really going to make her uncomfortable, but I'm putting her in the midst of thousands of people. So, how she reacts and how she reacts to the real-life superheroes that she meets and everything is really going to be a pivotal point in the book. So, we'll have to see how folks respond to that, but it's the second issue is I think is really going to be something. If you've been reading the book up until now, both the pilot season and the first issue of the miniseries, it's going to be totally different from what you've come to expect from Twilight Guardian.
I can see that being true, especially with that last the preview of the cover of the next issue and the last page where she gets the email from, like you said, from the Justice League of the real-life superhero movement. I'm looking forward to seeing Twilight Guardian interact with these with these people, so we can... We've seen her in her bubble. Now we'll be able to see how she behaves outside of that bubble. I had another question about her family. She has a relationship with her mother, a regular relationship, regular Scrabble game weekly, and her mother in a flashback mentions Twilight Guardian's father, and apparently Twilight Guardian's father would have taken off and essentially abandoned the family or disappeared because he was considered a quote-unquote person of interest in that string of disappearances that was occurring in the suburbs or in the town at the time. Now, in this issue, we meet Twilight Guardian's, or very briefly meet Twilight Guardian's arch nemesis, who is the Dust Devil. And I'm wondering if there's any connection between the that flashback and the Dust Devil.
Well, I can only give away so much. But see, one of the things that when I did the pilot season issue, You know, it was a one shot. As I said, it was kind of put together from what I'd already done with Twilight Guardian. And it was supposed to be what the pilot season issues were, which is a self-contained story, but which would give a reader an idea of what this character is like, what this series might be like, and, you know, just kind of leave them wanting more. So it's interesting, a lot of the reviewers, you know, and it got, you know, primarily really, really good reviews. But there were people who, even some of the folks who really liked it, said, well, this is really cool, but I'm not sure, you know, what this could end up being as a regular series as opposed to just a one-shot. And, you know, it does change. There's no way I could have done just probably the series the way that I did the one-shot issue. So one of the things that I'm trying to do with this, as far as giving it, I guess for lack of a better term, more plot, is to make it a mystery. But because it is Twilight Guardian, which I want to be as unconventional a comic as I can make it, it's not a conventional mystery, and it's not going to follow the rules of conventional mysteries. And so if you look at the book, pretty much everything that we get is through someone else's point of view and through someone else's spin. So we can't necessarily trust, you know, all of the journal entries and introspective stuff that Twilight Guardian says to us, obviously. But we also can't necessarily trust what we get from other people. We don't know whether to trust what her mother says as far as what happened with her father. You know, there's very little in the book that we can actually say this is truly happening, because it's all from someone else's point of view. And in some cases, if Twilight Guardian is telling us what her mother said, you know, it might be a couple of times removed from what actually happened, or, you know, from what someone originally said. So it becomes a kind of thing where the reader has to go through carefully. You've got to kind of parse everything that goes on. And even then, you still may not necessarily know what's going on. And it's the sort of thing, when I'm done with it, but we'll have to see how it goes. I at this point, I'm not exactly sure how readers will respond to the way that everything, you know, goes in, you know, by the time of the last issue. I'm not real worried about that, though, because, you know, I tell you, it's one of these things where I'm kind of hoping that the first issue, and the first issue's gotten great reviews here so far, but I'm hoping that the first issue will kind of weed out those folks that I don't really want reading the series anyway. Because I think the kind of people that enjoy Twilight Guardian enough that they want to keep going with the series are probably going to appreciate where it eventually goes with the whole mystery angle and everything. But it's a tough way to write. It really is, because there aren't that many definite things, and I have to write it in such a way that you know, you're constantly guessing. And again, a lot of people who are writing mysteries do that through plot, and, you know, you really have to follow the plot. Well, again, that's not my thing. I don't necessarily do that. So I have to kind of carry the mystery through narration and through, you know, characterization. And so I don't know. We'll see. I can't give you any definites about the whole deal with her father, or, you know, what, if anything, has happened to John, or, you know, any of that stuff. You'll have to kind of wait and see. But that's one of the more interesting things about the book, I think. And I notice a lot of the reviews so far have kind of mentioned that angle. And people seem to be responding to the fact that they don't exactly know what to make of Twilight Guardian. I think people who read the pilot season issue probably just thought, okay, you know, she's maybe a little bit out there, kind of eccentric, you know, what have you. And then they read this one, and there's a little bit of a darker edge to it. And I think they, you know, some people have suggested, you know, maybe she's something, you know, darker than what we necessarily know. And, you know, and I'm perfectly willing to let them think whatever they want to think about it. And it may be true, but I'm not going to say at this point.
I think part of the reason, well, for me anyway, that there's something a little bit unsettling, I guess you could say, about the character is that her real name is never revealed, and she never mentions it. Now, I'm wondering, is that a stylistic decision, or is that or is that thematic? And will we ever find out what her name is and her mother's name is? Because her mother's name is never mentioned either.
Yeah, the closest thing we ever get to a name is her mother on the answering machine messages just refers to her as Sugar.
Sugar, yes.
Yeah, which is not her real name, by the way.
I had surmised that.
Yeah, Sugar Sucrose, that's her real name.
Middle name Glucose.
I don't want to reveal anything, but I will. The name issue does come up in later issues, and as far as whether or not it's thematic, partially because in her own mind, she pretty much thinks of herself as Twilight Guardian, and I think it's in the second issue, but there's a scene where she makes reference to that, the fact that, you know, she is the Twilight Guardian, and that's who she thinks of herself as. So the name thing doesn't necessarily come up. There is something coming up about that. I won't reveal it, because sometimes I think surprise is the only thing I have going for me, Jason. So.
Well, I wasn't expecting you to spoil it, but I have to ask the hard hitting questions. One last question about Twilight Guardian. She is a female character and attractive at that. Sid Kochian does a good job, but there's never any overt sexuality to the character design. Or at least it's not an exaggerated or anything. We do see her in private moments in her home where she's just walking around in her underoos, but it's an honest way of portraying the character. Now, some people might say that Top Cow is somewhat known or infamous for doing the cheesecake with Witchblade and that sort of comic book. I'm wondering how, if you agree with that, or if people's perception of what Top Cow is may be a barrier for them to try Twilight Guardian, if you have anything to say about that, or if you've read any reviews from any regular Top Cow readers reading this and how they've been reacting to this.
Wow, I don't even know where to begin to start with this one, so... If I pontificate for too long here, you may want to stop me. But, first of all, as far as the Top Cow thing goes, Top Cow is certainly since the aforementioned Jim McLaughlin took over in 2003, they have changed tremendously as a company in that time, I think. At least that's what I've seen. They've really, I think, gotten away from a lot of that stuff. Right now they're doing a huge variety of titles. If you look at, especially when the pilot season comes out, if you look at the pilot season stuff just in 2008, when Twilight Guardian was in it, there was a vast array of stuff there, and really nothing overtly cheesecakey about it at all. And they've really been moving in that direction. And even if you take something like, say Witchblade, which at one time was, I guess, considered a fairly cheesecakey comic, it's the way that Ron Mars is doing it now. It's not that. I mean, I guess, the women are probably still drawn in a beautiful way, but it's not really focused on that kind of thing. And so it's interesting, though, but there's still kind of that prejudice against Top Cow. And I read that all the time. These people who just, they have this notion that it's all cheesecake kind of stuff. And if you look at it, I mean, I think there's probably more cheesecake going on, from the big two right now than there is Top Cow. But, maybe that's just my opinion. As far as Twilight Guardian in particular, when we first did the pilot season issue, we were talking about artists and how she should be drawn and everything. And the one thing that I absolutely, had to have was Twilight Guardian drawn in a very natural, normal-looking person, mundane kind of way. And that was a little tough to get at first because we had different artists kind of submit their version of Twilight Guardian. And some of them were just ridiculous. I mean, she was just popping out of her clothes, you know, just had, you know, just beach balls, you know, coming out of her shirt and everything. And, you know, that just wasn't the character. And so, you know, we finally kind of nailed it down. The character, even in the pilot season issue, actually was drawn differently than I imagined her. For one thing, she looks considerably younger. Well, when I wrote the mini comic version of Twilight Guardian, in my mind, she was probably about 35 to 40. She certainly does not look that age now. Of course, she was also a black woman at the time, so a lot changed there. It was one of those things where the artist just kind of drew her, you know, looking younger. And so I remember when people were reviewing the pilot season issue, you know, they'd say, well, she's a, you know, this is about a woman in, you know, maybe her early 20s, blah, blah, blah. So that's changed the character a little bit, just that depiction. Although in my head, she's still, you know, she's older than that. Maybe she's just, you know, well kept up. I don't know. Now, as far as the way that she's drawn in the new series, yeah, Sid has, it's one of these deals where I've never really specified this. When I write a script, I leave things as open as I possibly can. I basically just give, you know, the dialogue or the caption boxes, and then just the most kind of rudimentary, you know, this is what should be happening in this panel. But I really leave most of it up to the artist, just because that's part of the fun of doing comics, is letting them bring, you know, their stuff to it. So I didn't really specify necessarily when she's walking around the house, how she would be dressed or anything. But I think Sid handled it really well because, you know, she's not walking around her house in full dress because most people don't. You know, a lot of people are naked most of the time if they're at home, or, you know, they're fairly, you know, fairly undressed.
And yeah, I felt that added a lot of honesty to the scenes where she's alone in her home.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, even those scenes, if you look at them, I mean, no, they're not cheesecake. They just look like the way a person, you know, would look when they're at home, really. There's actually again, I can't give anything away, but there's a little bit in the second issue where we address the way that she looks as compared to the, you know, the average comic book kind of woman these days. So you may want to look for that. It's an interesting thing, though, because when I created her, I intended for her to be about as unglamorous as possible. And I know when the pilot season issue came out, I heard from a number of folks who said, you know, I'm really attracted to her, which I found interesting. And I don't think it's so much the fact that she's, you know, this really curvaceous woman or anything like that. I think it's more just kind of her personality. I think a lot of comic fans may be reacting to the fact that she's, you know, kind of a nerd girl. You know, she's into comics and things, but she's still got, you know, kind of a quality where, you know, there's something kind of appealing about her, even though she's not necessarily, you know, a raving beauty. But and probably the fact, again, if she was 40, as I said, as I see her in my mind, maybe they wouldn't be so attracted to her. I don't know. It's a big consideration for me when this stuff, you know, because it's one of those things I've never had any desire not only to read cheesecakey kind of comics, but I certainly, you know, I've never wanted to create that kind of thing. It's just not my thing. It's the one thing that I've been really insistent about is that we not, you know, not turn her into some sort of comic book bombshell.
Well, I appreciate that because it makes for a much more interesting character for me personally anyway. So here I'm assuming you're writing the book only for me, so thank you.
Well, and
sorry to go ahead.
I've told this before, but you and people with the kind of mentality and insight that I see from you, you're my target audience here. I will be the first to tell you, I realize not everyone is going to be, the kind of person that enjoys this comic. It's not what I'm shooting for. And, on the rare occasion that I do get a bad review on something, one of the things I do is I always go back and I look at that particular reviewer's other reviews, and I look for the positive ones to see what they do like. And 9 times out of 10, it's pretty predictable stuff. They're the kind of folks who just want to, read this month's, Batman or whatever, and see what kind of badass thing he does next. Well, then that's fine. If that's the kind of stuff you're into, that's okay. That's not what I'm shooting for, though.
Thanks for tuning in once again and listening to our interview with Troy Hickman. If you would like to know more about Troy and Twilight Guardian, go to Facebook and search Twilight Guardian. There is a fan page there, which is actually maintained by Twilight Guardian herself. Troy will write little tidbits of story there, some pinups, and other interesting bitlets. Also, register an account with StashMyComics.com. It's a free online comics cataloging and database software. As you add to the database by providing information on comic books, images, and that sort of thing, you will be rewarded points, which are redeemable for tickets in giveaways. And keep an eye on the StashMyComics.com homepage for a Troy Hickman giveaway. Also, go to the forums and talk it up with other collectors. And read the blog for interesting reviews, columns, and interviews. Until next time, live long and prosper. May the force be with you. Excelsior.